I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about people who take advantage of and even prey on senior citizens. We're going to talk about elder fraud and about what seniors and their loved ones can do about it. My guests will be Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson, Nancy Stone of Senior Medicare Patrol, and Attorney Mark Maddox. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or locating us on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, supporting Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Indiana during National Mentoring Month in January. More on how to become a Big Brother Big Sister or be a part of a big couple at bebigforkids.org.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about elder fraud. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests are Connie Lawson, who is the Indiana Secretary of State. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. I'm very glad to be here. I worked with you when I was in the Senate with your students that came there, and I'm glad to be here today.
You did indeed, and I was always grateful for that. Thank you very much. It's good to have you here. We also have with us Nancy Stone, who is with Senior Medicare Patrol. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you having us here.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. And Attorney Mark Maddox. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Like the ladies, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show today.
Great. Well, I would like to start. We probably ought to define what elder fraud is, and I'm going to throw that one to Secretary of State Lawson first.
Well, seniors are frequently taken advantage of. The way my office gets involved is through the securities side of it. We license and regulate securities professionals, financial advisors, mortgage brokers, and we also protect seniors by investigating scams and assisting prosecutors in prosecuting scams. And we see Ponzi schemes and seniors being taken advantage of in several different ways.
How big a part of the workload for your office is this?
Well, we have one division that's pretty much devoted to securities, and we'll be investigating anywhere between 40 and 50 cases on a daily basis.
40 or 50 a
mm-hmm.
day?
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, could you talk a little bit about what elder fraud is and what are some examples of what we would consider elder fraud?
And in our situation,
everybody's got frogs in the
throat. Yes, we're looking at Medicare fraud and how, you know, seniors are targeted. Because everyone knows they're on Medicare. And as many people don't know, your Medicare number is most often your Social Security number. So one of the big things scammers do is use the telephone because seniors still answer their phone. And they try to get their Medicare number. They pose as Medicare, representatives of some sort. And if they get their Medicare number and their bank account number,
then it's identity theft, yes, and they're off to the,
yes,
races, basically.
But there's all types of other, you know, medical fraud, and that, you know, we investigate too, or we report. Actually, our goal is to educate seniors and their caregivers on how to protect themselves, detect any fraud, any potential fraud, and report it.
Mark, break down for me a little bit. What are some of the more common scams?
Well, the seniors are targeted because they have a couple of features that aren't as prevalent throughout the rest of the community. Seniors have money. Mm-hmm. Many of them are retired or semi-retired, so they have time. Some of them are lonely, so mm-hmm. they're receptive to a little bit of attention that people pay them. We see, like Secretary Lawson, I tend to spend most of my time in the investment area. And, you know, what we are seeing a lot these days are seniors who are being preyed upon by people they know and trust, family members, greedy children, unscrupulous caregivers, people who have, you know, access to the seniors and have a lot of trust that's placed in them by the seniors, and then they're able to abuse that trust. One of the biggest cases we've worked on a few years ago, if anyone has recently seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, the old notorious brokerage firm Stratton Oakmont led by Jordan Belfort, that was one of your sort of classic boiler room operations that did amongst the most damage that we've ever seen in the securities area. They've estimated approximately $200 million was stolen by Stratton Oakmont and Belfort from their customers, most of whom were seniors.
We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or locate us on Twitter at WFYI. Or, and a couple of listeners have done that. One, a listener named Robin, sent in a question, says, my parents just moved to Arizona and have made new friends. One of their new friends has a son who is a stockbroker. My parents are all keen about moving their money to Bob. I don't know anything about Bob, but they are gung-ho. How can I help protect them? I'll start with Mark first on that one, and then let Secretary Lawson.
Well, again, this is something that we see happen a lot with seniors and even other members of the community where you know, they have a distant family member or a child of a friend who you know, wants their business. And you know, people have to keep their guard up. You know, the trust is usually high when you're dealing with a family member or a friend's child, but you have to keep your guard up and you have to do your homework on that particular financial advisor before you choose to invest with them. One of the best ways to do
what
it.
What sort of ways to, should
yeah,
they do
one of the
homework?
One of the easiest things that people can do if they use the Internet or know someone who can use the Internet is they can look up a broker's public record. There's a website called FINRA, FINRA.org, and there's a broker check feature on that website. And Secretary Lawson's office contributes to this website for the brokers that they register and take actions against in Indiana. But it's a computer system that will, you know, accumulate all the information about customer complaints, bankruptcies, other lawsuits that have been filed against a financial advisor. In addition to that, you know, just getting on the Internet and Googling a potential financial advisor's name is something that I think is important to do as well, just to see what comes up.
Could you give that URL again? Because people, much as I wish that they would sit right by the radio listening to my program with pencil in hand, they often don't.
Yeah. Well, this, one of the things they can do is just Google the term broker check. But okay. It's at a website at FINRA, FINRA.org.
Okay. What common sense steps? Say, let's take this from two directions, Secretary Lawson. First, let's assume I'm a senior and, you know, I've retired and suddenly I actually have, you know, I have access to my retirement funds, my portfolio, all of that, all of the conditions that, that Mark has listed. What steps should I take to protect myself? And then the second part would be, let's assume I'm a child or a loved one of a senior, and I want to make sure that my parents don't get taken advantage of. What steps should I take then?
Well, the first thing you need to do is ask questions. And Mark has already mentioned you definitely need to make sure that the individual is licensed and the product that they're selling is registered. In Indiana, you can do that on IndianaInvestmentWatch.com. But there are red
Go
flags.
Go ahead and give that to them again.
Indiana, I-N-D-I-A-N-A, investmentwatch.com. And there are lots of red flags to somebody who's trying to, you know, defraud you. And so, first of all, you need to make sure that they're licensed. You need to make sure that they're willing to give you the prospectus in writing. Any security worth buying just about always is in writing. Ask them if they're willing to discuss it with your attorney and your accountant. don't be pushed. If somebody is trying to say, you know, you've got to act now, you've only got 24 hours to make this decision, or it's going to be, you're going to miss out on this great deal, that's a huge red flag. And if they always come to you.
Yeah, the ship that's sailing might be the Titanic.
That's right. If they always come to you, they may not have a legitimate office and may not be legitimate. If they try to use a fear-based appeal because you're on a fixed income and they know that you would like some regular income at a higher rate than what is normal, then that's another red flag. So you just have to ask questions. You know, Bernie Madoff said the only investors that he wouldn't allow in his portfolio were the ones that asked too many questions. So you have to do your investigating.
Okay. And you know, Nancy, in terms of the second piece of that, let's assume, you know, that I'm a child of a senior citizen, and I want to make sure that my parents aren't being taken advantage of. What are some common sense steps I could take to make sure?
It starts on the beneficiary.
Let me qualify that in another way, because we're getting into kind of an emotional. How do I do that also without insulting them?
Well, I think it's I think I had a call recently from a woman in her 60s who was reporting that her mother had gotten scammed over the phone, given her Medicare number. Mm-hmm. And she said, I know better, you know, because I tell her all the time. But it's just, I think, having that conversation to start off with, mom, you know, or mom or dad, don't, you know, to your phone or screen your calls is one of the bigger things, I think, because a lot of these scams are perpetrated via the telephone. And I think it's also looking at your, what they call your Medicare summary notice, what we know as an EOB, those on not on Medicare. If you're on Medicare Advantage, it would be your explanation of benefits. Look at those and make sure they match up. We offer a free, if anybody wants one, a healthcare, personal healthcare journal, that people can write down their appointments, because it gets really confusing when you have a lot of appointments and a lot of tests and procedures and so forth. So keeping track of that and helping them do that, I think, is the best way.
Yes, Mark Maddox.
John, one of the things I think is really important here is the fact that when, as senior citizens progress with their lives, most of them become less and less capable of being able to take care of their own financial affairs. Mm-hmm. So it often falls to, you know, their closest family members to have to start working with them and looking over their shoulder at some point when they're younger. Mm-hmm. And then that'll progressively go to the point where a child or a grandchild might even want to actually take over with power of attorney to actually mm-hmm. handle the affairs for the senior citizen. It's a really tough issue for a lot of families because, you know, many seniors don't like to give up control over things in their lives that they've historically controlled. But it is just an absolute necessity just with the aging process with most people that, you know, those kids need to take on a gradually more significant role.
What I'm going to stay with you for a second, Mark, and I would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. What are some of the signs, maybe, that a senior isn't as capable of taking care of his or her own affairs? And, you know, what are some of the steps that you can take to protect?
Well, I think some of the warning signs, I guess, that I've seen with some of my clients over the years have been, some of the seniors seem to be more and more confused about what's going on with their personal affairs. They're asking a lot more questions to their kids about, hey, you know, what do you think this is? What do you think that is? In the investment area, sometimes we've seen seniors start to experience some cash flow issues. You know, monies that were previously sent to them regularly stop, or the access to pay some of the bills, they can't do it anymore because either, you know, they've found themselves in a Ponzi scheme and the jig is up, or mm-hmm. Some of the risky investments have come to roost and the dollars that were previously there, you know, are gone. Usually, for a child who is communicating with a parent or a senior pretty regularly, they're going to start hearing some things in the conversation that just are going to sound a little different to them than sort of the normal status quo.
What sort of things, like, concerns about money when they weren't there before.
Yeah, and maybe some discussions about some new people who the child has never heard of before. You know, I'll even tell a personal story on my own mom, but, you know, she told me that she, you know, answered the door for a stranger the other day. She's 83 now, and somebody wanted to, shovel a driveway that was basically already shoveled, and it cost my mom like $25 to, for the privilege of opening that door. So, you know, I just think sometimes as people age, you know, their own judgment isn't what it used to be, you know, when they were 10 or 20 years younger.
Well, there's also, it sounds like almost a feeling of intimidation, too, of somebody standing there on your door, unfortunately.
Yep.
We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson, Nancy Stone of Senior Medicare Patrol, and Attorney Mark Maddox. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by Terry Lee Honda Service in Avon, featuring factory techs with 29 bays for all warranty work, plus an area for family waiting. That's TLC, the Terry Lee Commitment. More information is available at terryleehonda.com. And by Ice Miller, believing experience, teamwork, and strategic thinking can help change become opportunity. Ice Miller, build advantage. More at icemiller.com. And you can check the new WFYI.org website on your mobile device. No app is needed. Just click to WFYI.org. You can also get the latest updates at WFYI.org/news. Our forecast today, partly cloudy with a high around 6. West wind gusting to about 25 miles an hour will make it feel like 14 below to 24 below zero. You're with 90.1 WFYI.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about elder fraud on No Limits today. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard this show. I listened to your show, and I heard this show was going to be on elder fraud, and I wanted to find out. There's a situation, and the situation is such. This past Sunday, which makes this show very pertinent, someone called my parents. My mother and father are 87 years old. They called, they spoke with my mother and said that she was going to be arrested. They were on their way out to arrest her for not showing up for jury duty. And it frightened my mother. It disturbed my dad. I took the number, and I called that number, and nobody answered it. And it came from INFOP. I have the exact number, but that's where it came from. And I'm wondering, okay, it's obviously an administrative problem, one would think, or was it fraud? And I'm thinking, who to call, the Secretary of State's office, who to call on situations like this, because it disturbed the peace of the house. I have dinner with my parents on Sunday, and it disturbed the peace of the house the whole of Sunday evening, and I was trying to track down who were these people who were uninformed enough to know that an 87-year-old lady should not be being called and harassed about jury duty. She is a political person. She's worked at the city county building. She retired working in the city. She should be on all the roles that are available downtown as far as people's names. She's a known name. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going, what was this? Why did this happen? And who to call to report such a thing?
Well, I'll tell you what, Charles, thank you very much for the call and the question. I'm going to throw that first to Secretary of State Lawson because I suspect she can answer your question. But thank you again for calling, and I hope your parents are okay.
Well, Charles, yeah. I'm certainly sorry to hear about the situation, but sadly enough, I hear similar situations as I travel the state and talk to seniors in their senior communities. I will say that it would not be a legitimate call at all.
Well, the fact that it came on a Sunday also.
It came on a Sunday, and I don't know how it came up INFOP, but I can tell you that that is not, would not have been from, they probably wanted to make it look like it was coming from law enforcement of some type. That would not be the case. And I'm certainly sorry that that person threatened your parents. I would say that in this situation, it would be the Attorney General's office with consumer protection, since they weren't trying to sell a security. It wouldn't be the Secretary of State. But it would be important, as with any fraud, to make sure, you know, the worst thing you can do is not report it, because the Attorney General might not be able to track down one complaint, but if they see a pattern, that certainly would help, and they would be able to track that down in a easier manner.
Mark, I'm going to let you jump in, too, on something like this. I mean, you sort of alluded to it, set the table with the story about your mother, too, and the guy sure. showing up at your door. And it was a component we really hadn't talked about with this, where people kind of, you know, we think of elder fraud as somebody trying to entice you, but there is also a kind of coercion, intimidation category, extortion, if you will, piece of this as well.
Yeah, there sure is. It sounds like the caller's mother was, you know, the victim of someone who was either, you know, perhaps trying to extract a purported fine from her for not showing up for jury duty, or someone who wanted to extract some of her personal information in exchange for not, quote, arresting her, and then trying to use that for some sort of identity theft. Yeah, clearly a scam. Clearly the fact that there aren't going to be too many of our hardworking government friends calling you on a Sunday, you know, about jury duty or anything else.
Yeah, they value their weekends, too.
They do. Again, it's just, you know, it's just so so tragic that, you know, so many of our seniors find themselves the victim of this. One thing I think that's very important, we haven't talked about it also, but the one of the greatest things that's happened to prevent some of this elder fraud has been the inaction of the do not call list, both mm-hmm. the state and federal do not call list. In the world in which I typically work, the securities and investment area, we've found, although it hasn't gone down to zero, the Stratton Oakmonts of the world, the bad boiler rooms, have been greatly reduced as a result of the do not call list. And everybody who listens to this broadcast, if you are not currently signed up for a do not call list, put yourself on it. And if you have any people that you love or care about, make sure that their phone numbers are on the do not call list, too, because that eliminates a lot of the fraud that could happen over the phone.
Does the fact that there are call, you know, that we have caller ID and all of that eliminate some of this, too? Secretary
Lawson. I would say definitely yes. I can see where that, if that was on a caller ID, it might look like it would come from a trustworthy spot. But I would just say, you know, if it's not someone that you're expecting to call, don't answer. And hang up on unsolicited calls.
John, in addition to putting my mom on the do not call list many years mm-hmm. ago, two other bits of instructions I've given her, and she has caller ID. Don't answer the phone from anybody on the caller ID you don't know or recognize. And now, as a result of our last conversation, don't open the door for anybody who you don't know.
Don't recognize. We've gotten a question from a listener on Facebook, and if you'd like to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits, WFYI. It says, my father is 80 years old and lives on his own. He just attended a seminar about variable annuities and thinks he should move his money there. I don't know much about variable annuities. Is this a good idea? Anybody want to give investment advice here? I'm seeing a lot of shaving.
I'll be
Mark.
Happy to do it.
Okay.
You know, my friends in the insurance business don't like the statement I'm going to make here, but I find that variable annuities are usually not the best or most appropriate investment for most investors in most circumstances.
Why is that?
Well, variable annuities have big commissions mm-hmm. associated with them, which in large part is why financial advisors are motivated to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And variable annuities are often the investment component in them are often mutual funds mm-hmm. that people could just buy the mutual funds directly without wrapping those mutual funds within the variable annuity wrapper. In addition to the high upfront commissions that usually come with them, there are very high administrative costs associated with the variable annuities, usually, you know, a couple 3% per year. And at the end of the day, most investors could be invested in almost identically same mutual funds you get in a variable annuity, and it's just going to cost them a lot less through commissions and annual expenses.
We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Joni, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm convinced that my brother is taking money out of my mom's brokerage account. She's 88, she's got Alzheimer's, and I don't know what I can do to protect her and her money.
Good question, and Joni, thank you, and I'm sorry for your situation. Mark, should we stay with you on this one and then let Secretary of State Lawson and Nancy chime in as they wish? Thanks very much for the call, Joni.
Sure. Well, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, it's not that uncommon of a situation for, you know, greedy family members to sometimes take advantage of a senior citizen, particularly, you know, as they get more advanced in age and become, I think, less capable of dealing with their own financial affairs. Sometimes it's the family member who is located most closely to mom or dad, who has the most access and, you know, is sometimes tempted, as they're maybe starting out with good intentions of helping mom and dad by writing their bills and helping them with their affairs, they start writing checks or transferring money out of mom's account into their own accounts. And, you know, the first thing that they have to do in that circumstance is look at the documents, or get somebody to look at the documents and try to understand what has happened. Try to talk to mom about it. Lots of times, you know, the elderly parent is so trusting of the person who's stealing from them, they don't want to believe that, you know, favorite son Johnny has been doing something that unscrupulous. But it unfortunately, it does happen a lot. So the first thing is to make sure that what you think is happening is actually going on. Look at the statements, talk to mom. And then, you know, if you do determine that some bad stuff is going on, then you need to try to convince mom to erect things that prohibit the offending family member from taking money that they shouldn't be taking. Mm-hmm. Again, another example might be giving a power of attorney then to the child who has discovered the wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm. Secretary of State Lawson, anything to add to?
Well, we don't. That wouldn't be a normal complaint that we would see in our office. But again, I would just go back to you know, if someone believes that they have a beloved family member who's being taken advantage of by bad advice, or somebody who might be running a Ponzi scheme taking money from them, you know, the worst thing you can do is not report it. And so, because it could help someone else from being scammed. So, you know, if it was thought to be a security scam, they need to report it to our office.
We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. My question today has to do with mail fraud, or what I suspect to be mail fraud. When I get a very official-looking document that promises me that there's a payment of $2.5 million just waiting to be sent to me, and all I have to do is enclose a fee of $20 and mail it back to these people, they clearly state this is not a sweepstakes or an award notification, and it doesn't guarantee that I've won any sweepstakes, but somehow they're promising me some money, and they'll send me a report for the $20 that I send them. Is that fraud?
I was going to throw that one to Nancy, but I think we probably ought to go to the lawyer on the panel here.
Yeah,
Mark, thanks very much for the call, Michael.
Michael, that very clearly is fraud. You know, the general rule of thumb when it comes to these sort of, you know, sweepstakes announcements or mail announcements that you've won something or may have won something, is that if anybody is requiring you to send a penny back to someone else in order to claim your prize or claim your winnings or see if you've won, it's a scam. So no legitimate sweepstakes or no legitimate contest that you actually win is going to require you to to pay them a penny. If they do, it's a scam.
We had a caller who didn't want to go on the air, had a question, and actually brought me up because I realized I've been remiss here. We probably ought to explain what power of attorney is and what it might do. So, Mark, I'll go with you on that.
All right. So, you know, as an adult, once a person becomes 18 years old in the state of Indiana, you have the legal capacity to do everything that you think an adult can do, make contracts, you know, vote, pretty much do everything except legally drink alcohol. But there are different points in life where people can become severely disabled, mentally or physically, where they may need someone to take over their affairs either for an intermittent period of time or for the rest of their lives. And one of the legal devices that you can consider doing is what's called a power of attorney. A power of attorney you can give to one person or you can give to more than one person. And the power of attorney allows the person who you give the power to step into your shoes and do everything that they, either limited things that you want them to do or everything for you that can involve writing checks for you, paying your bills, dealing with your investments, buying and selling real estate on your behalf. They can do just a few things if you want them to, or they can literally do everything because of your period of either short-term or permanent disability.
How difficult is it to set that up? And I'm going to go back to the caller we had, Joni, who was talking about a situation where her mother has Alzheimer's and may not be, you know, legally competent. How cumbersome is it? A process is that then?
Yeah, that's a good question. So someone who is entering into a situation like where they know that a family member is getting diagnosed with Alzheimer's or a similar dementia-type condition probably should pay a visit to a lawyer who has some experience in dealing with the estate planning area. And a lot of lawyers that I know will give you sort of a standard packet of estate planning documents that could include powers of attorney, living wills, a simple will, and the typical charge for that, I think maybe the cheapest you can get that done for is a couple $1,000s or a little more than a couple $1,000s. And a power of attorney is usually something that is discussed and included in that type of estate planning.
Nancy, since your focus is really on Medicare, but there's an awful lot of money that flows through that system,
yes.
A tremendous amount. What are the most common scams there? Since a lot of this stuff does seem to come through the phone.
Well, and that is, you know, medical identity theft. They want to get your Medicare number because that's your Social Security number, and then they get your bank number. So that... And they use a lot of intimidation or, you know, these variations on a theme, like you need a new Medicare card because of the Affordable Care Act. And so they pose as Medicare and they get your number. But there are also, you know, other forms of fraud, which can include, you know, upcharging from providers, upcharging or charging you for services you never had or charging you for excessive medical tests and so forth. So, again, it kind of goes back to being a good partner with your physician, questioning charges that you don't think are correct or you just don't remember, and maybe partnering with a family member that, you know, could help you kind of decipher some of those medical codes.
Secretary of State Lawson, you said at the top of the program that that your office deals with 40 to 50 of these every day. What are the bulk of the scams? I mean, the incidents of fraud here.
Well, usually we'll see a Ponzi scheme where someone sells.
Probably ought to take a step back and explain what a Ponzi scheme is.
Named after a guy by the name of Charles Ponzi, who ran a scam where he sold investments and he paid the early investors with the later investors that came into the program. Now, oftentimes, these people will produce fraudulent statements, making it look like you're earning a great deal of money. One case that we had in Vigo County this summer, the guy was even doing a newsletter to make people think that that his companies, that he had a diversity of companies in Israel, were doing quite well, when in fact he had not did not have a company in Israel at all. So we see the Ponzi schemes where they get the early investors in, they pay them from the later investors. And then we see the affinity fraud, which is a Ponzi scheme along with people who are trying to build a common bond, usually a religious belief, so that you think that if they belong to my church or to my organization, they're just like me and they wouldn't even think about running a scam on me.
I would think, and you probably speak for the people in your office, that it would be difficult. I mean, excuse me, the thought that, you know, my parents worked hard all of their lives, that in their retirement years somebody's going to prey on them when I really want them to be enjoying that time. It would be difficult not to approach investigating these things and dealing with them without a certain amount of outrage, I would think.
I've seen, firsthand some really egregious cases. Just this summer, we had a case in Marion County where a guy by the name of Thomas Redmond actually defrauded about 10 victims, $580,000, and he went to church with them. A couple of them were 90-year-old widows, and obviously they're never going to recoup that money. Mm. So it is very egregious.
We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Locate us on Twitter at WFYI. Again, we're talking about elder fraud. My guests are Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson, Nancy Stone of Senior Medicare Patrol, and Attorney Mark Maddox. I'm John Krall. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about elder fraud today. My guests are Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson, Nancy Stone of Senior Medicare Patrol, and Attorney Mark Maddox. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Donna, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question is it absolutely necessary to have a power of attorney to sign for someone? My mother is blind. I am on her bank account, so I have been paying her bills for many, many years. But recently I signed, she had some minor surgery, and I signed for her surgery. But I do not have a power of attorney for her.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Donna. We'll try to get an answer for you.
Yeah, Donna, this is Mark. It's not always a forgery if you sign someone else's signature on their behalf. If you have permission to sign someone's signature, whether it's your mother or your spouse or a good friend, that's very permissible. But again, at some point, you know, I think you and your mom would want to entertain a discussion about whether, you know, it may be a time in her life where she might want to consider giving you power of attorney for either limited or full reasons.
Now, it should be emphasized, you don't give power of attorney to just anyone. It's got to be someone you really trust.
Yeah, right? Maybe the person you trust the most.
Yes. Yeah, we've gotten an email question from a listener named Robin, and if you would like to send us a question by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. She says, how long does my do not call request last? Do I need to renew it? Is there one for cell phones, too? Should I start with Secretary of State Lawson on that one?
You know, I think if you've signed up for the Do Not Call list, as far as the Attorney General's office goes, you probably ought to get online to make sure you're still signed up for it. I think they do expire, but yes, there is a cell phone Do Not Call list. There's a state Do Not Call list, there's a federal Do Not Call list, and there's also a cell phone Do Not Call list.
So are there places where, Mark, I see you nodding, are there places you can check on that easily and quickly to make sure you're there and you're current?
Yes, I think Secretary Lawson got that right. For some reason, I'm thinking there was some sort of original expiration of, mm-hmm. of one of them, maybe the federal, that might require you to have to go in there every 10 years or so and redo it. But I, you know, for people who are who know how to use the internet, you can go online, you can enter your residential home number, you can enter your cell phone number, and if it's already on the list, I think it tells you that it's there. But I don't think there's any harm in checking. You know, every 5 years or so, if you think about it, and make sure you're on the list, and on both lists too, not just the federal.
I just want to add that's not necessarily going to stop the calls.
No,
actually, just not answering the phone because these scammers are coming from overseas, and mm-hmm. you know they're criminals. They don't care about the new
about the law. Well, and it also occurs to me that it's something we haven't mentioned, but that could be. One way, and Mark told a story on his mother, I'll tell one on mine, that, you know, we got her a computer a few years ago, and, you know, it is the loveliest ornament in her living room right now, but never used for any purpose. Is that something that children and grandchildren could help? Okay, Mom, we're going to check and see if you are still on the no-call list. We will look that up for you. It's a way to do the investigating. I see Secretary of State Lawson. Is that a good idea?
I think so. You know, many of our senior citizens do use the internet frequently, and I think not only should they say, Mom, here's the way we look this up and here's how we can find out this information, they also need to make sure that the senior citizen knows that there are so many phishing emails out there. And one of the things that I always tell seniors is, you know, you'll receive an email that looks very official from a bank, and they will say, you know, because you haven't answered us, you know, we're having problems with your account. We need an answer right away. Click on this link that's within the email. Mm-hmm. And you never want to click on that link because it probably is not going to the official website. You want to make sure that your parents and grandparents know to type in that URL themselves.
We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Don, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm just sharing an incident about direct phone fraud. I use my caller ID to identify the phone calls that are coming in. And the other day I got one from Jamaica promising me that if I just went to Walmart and got a prepaid card. It's Green Dot or Visa or MasterCard. It just needed to be a prepaid card. And I came back and they would call me later and get the numbers off that card that I would win $200,000 or a large sum of money. Well, the bottom line is they take the numbers off of the back of the Green Dot card or the MasterCard or Visa, whatever prepaid card they're asking for, and they pocket the money themselves, and you never see a dime. These kinds of direct phone calls are hard to stop because, as you say, they are calling from out of state, but my caller ID helps me write down the phone number so that I can check before I go any further to see if this is a legitimate organization.
Thanks very much for the call, Don.
They also spoof those numbers, so you can't really tell. You can't rely on the caller ID even because they can spoof the number to look like a legitimate number.
And what do you mean by spoof?
Well, I'm not sure how to explain it, but they use a legitimate, just like that call that came in from the FOP.
Yeah.
So it's called spoofing, and they just use that.
It's a way of masking the number you're calling from
number,
and suggesting
yeah.
that
and
it comes
from. And they change those all the time.
And update. We are talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've established there's quite a lot of this, at least in terms of the personal damage. How much money are we talking about here in Indiana that you know, elders are fleeced. How much disappears? Secretary of State Lawson, I guess that's a different way of asking just how big a problem is this.
Sure. Well, we know that about 85 million Americans invest in the stock market on an annual basis, and we know that about $40 billion is lost every year to fraud. The average loss to a senior would be somewhere between $12,500 and $25,000. Obviously, people lose a lot more than that. And I will tell you, since I believe it's since 2002, my office has been involved along with our local prosecutors in cases right here in Indiana. And I believe 74 different cases we've had convictions, and we've recovered over $500 and some million.
$500 million. Just in those 74 cases?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm sorry, it's 30.6 million. 580 years of time, 30.6 million dollars has been recovered.
$30.6 million in 74 cases. Mm-hmm. So you're obviously talking about six figures in a lot of these cases. How do they, you know, on something like that, Mark, how do you make more than $100,000 disappear and nobody notice it right away?
Well, again, it's part of the scam and part of the fraud that people are made to believe. It's oftentimes they're given fake statements, you know, that continue to indicate that the funds are still there and even growing. You know, Bernie Madoff probably is going to hold the world record for this for probably the rest of my lifetime.
Well, let's hope. Yeah,
yeah. He I think carried his fraud on for something around 30 years. And he would send
and
his
that was
investors.
A variation of a Ponzi scheme as well.
And he took about $17 billion approximately from people over those 30 years. But, you know, it's generally people don't generally realize right away that they've been victimized. And the other thing I might add here is that when seniors are the victims of fraud, most of them don't get back most of what they've lost. I mean, in many of these Ponzi schemes and many of these other situations, you know, if you've given your ID card number to somebody in Jamaica and they go cash it in Jamaica, that money's gone. You're not going to get that back. It's difficult in some of these other situations. I think, you know, the best advice I could give to people who they think they may be the subject of them would be to contact somebody like Secretary Lawson's Securities Division, or contact a lawyer who's a little familiar with this area as soon as you start to suspect something may be wrong. Because in some instances, it's a little bit like diagnosing cancer sooner as opposed to later. If you can get on it a little bit more quickly, you can have a better
outcome.
You have
a chance of recovery or something.
And I'll say with Medicare fraud, of course, that's nationally. We are all affected by that. They estimate $60 billion is lost to Medicare fraud. Mm-hmm. And that affects all of us in increased premiums, taxes, so forth.
Well, and I've got to ask, though, you know, I mean, I can think of few things more despicable than stealing from an old person who has worked hard and set something aside, may not be in a position really to care for himself or herself or protect himself or herself. What do these people say when they get caught? Secretary of State Lawson, I mean, what's the rationale?
Well, I've was in the courtroom in Vigo County just recently on the Jason Severs case, and he ran a scheme for about 10 years and had about 30 victims. I think it was about $3.3 million. He did plead guilty, and he walked over to one of the family members and said, very softly, "I'm sorry." In another case in Johnson County that we just had recently, the person, McClary, I believe was his name, sobbed. And so I think they all have different reactions. The person who was sobbing, I don't know if he was feeling sorry for himself or for his victims, but hopefully they do realize by the time they're caught, you know, that they shouldn't have done what they've done. I will say that we do have a restitution fund in Indiana now, and as Mark said, you know, you need to report it so that we can start the investigation right away. It may prevent another victim, but also it can move quickly to freeze assets if there are any, so that we can recover some of the victims' money. And our restitution, unfortunately, is small. As Mark said, most people will get back pennies on the dollar, but we can award 25% of the ordered restitution or $15,000, whichever is less.
And are there enhanced penalties for people who get you know, get convicted of taking from elderly. Are there any enhanced ones? Yeah.
There can be. Certainly, they can be considered, I think, what they call aggravated circumstances under the criminal laws here in Indiana and other places, and they can have years added to their sentence. Unfortunately, John, again, this is an area where, you know, in American society, we tend to treat the white-collar criminal a little bit more easily than we do the blue-collar criminal.
Yeah, you steal with a pen as opposed to a gun.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and sometimes, you know, again, to go back to one of my favorite stories, The Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort, that man stole about $200 million from Americans, and he ended up doing about 22 months in jail because he got a good lawyer and he cooperated and wore a wire and got some of his other buddies in trouble. But, you know, we oftentimes see sentences for some of these bad guys that you just shake your head and go, that isn't anywhere close to what he should have been given.
Mary, welcome to the program. Mary?
Hi. Yes, I missed. I didn't hear you say my name.
Sorry.
Good afternoon. I just turned on the radio, so I don't know everything that's been discussed. My experience has to deal with durable medical equipment, CPAP machines, scooters, that type of thing that insurance would cover part of the cost. And this involved an in-network vendor here in Indianapolis, and I needed a scooter, and I had met my deductible, and I was only responsible for 10% of the bill, yet this vendor wanted to charge me an extra $1,000 on top of what he collected for the insurance company. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't quite follow exactly what the process was. So I came back to this vendor at least two or three more times and explained to him that my insurance company, you know, had said I was only responsible for 10% out the door, and that in indeed being an in-network provider precluded him from asking me for more money than 10%. This has happened a couple of different places with durable medical equipment. I finally found an in-network vendor here in Indianapolis who, when I repeated this story to them, said, we don't play that game. So my question is, has anyone on the panel run into this? And number two,
yes, I think,
who's responsible?
Yeah, I think we do have an answer. I can see Nancy nodding her head here, and we're getting close on time, so let me get her to jump in. Thank you very much for the call, Mary.
Durable medical equipment, or known as DME, is a big area of fraud. And so you should – I couldn't quite tell if you were on Medicare or on just a private insurance plan. And I believe you would report that to the Attorney General's office if it was, you know, a regular insurance or maybe Department of Insurance. If you are on Medicare, please give me a call at 317-205-9201.
Go ahead and give that again, Nancy.
Yes, 317-205-9201. And we can help report that to the proper authorities. Even if you didn't fall for it, we would like to go ahead. If you're on Medicare or a Medicare you know, Advantage or Medicare with a supplement, give me a call. Otherwise, I would call the Attorney General's office and let them know. I think you've all heard about that scooter store story that was a national fraudulent activity, and it's rampant.
Is there a huge black market in this? I mean, that's really, it's sort of like we've got the existing system, and then we're going to run a black market alongside it.
Well, I think it's just all these upcharging, and they sell you things you don't even people that don't even need scooters get scooters. And again, it goes back to talking to your doctor and getting a medical opinion of what you need for anything medical. You know, build that relationship with your physician. Don't go to those free, get a free heart scan and all that, because then oftentimes they want your insurance. Well, if it's free, then why do they need the insurance? So just go ahead and ask. If you need a medical exam or a test, talk to your doctor.
That probably will have to be the last word. If there is a takeaway from this program, it is ask questions always. That you you know, don't take things on faith. And if something does alarm you, throw up a hand and let people know that it scares you a little bit, right? Is that a fair takeaway?
Exactly.
Well, I would like to thank each of my guests, Connie Lawson, Indiana Secretary of State. Thank you for joining us today. Hope you'll come back.
I certainly will. Thank you for having me.
Nancy Stone with Senior Medicare Patrol. Thank you for joining us as
thank
well.
You. Thank
good
you.
To have you here.
Sure.
Hope you will come back as well. And Mark Maddox, attorney, thank you very much for being with us. We hope you'll come back in here as well. We will be back on Tuesday when we're going to be talking about noted author John Green. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.